Hello, everybody. Welcome into this episode of the Frederick Uncut podcast. I almost said something incorrect, so I'm glad I stopped myself. We have a very special. I'm really excited for this episode today because I have so many questions, and I hope we walk out of this episode new people. That's what I'm hoping for. So.
Wow. Excellent. Okay. Do I get to choose who my new person is?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
We're going to make it a competition.
Very good. Very good.
We're here with Ann Kelly. How are you? Life coach extraordinaire, correct?
That is. That's exactly that's my website. No.
.net. Lifecoachextraordinaire.net. And Kate Masters, how are you?
I'm great.
You're
thank
great?
You.
Okay. Of the two of us, who do you think is more susceptible to being coached, just knowing us for the first 2 minutes that you've known us?
Well, Colin, you're a problem. I can just tell. You, but a challenge. How great. You know, but Kate may have a hidden side, so it all remains to be seen.
We'll ask again at the end.
Yes, that's good.
So many times I've been referred to as a problem, so this starts off great. We always begin asking a little bit of background information. I'm interested in knowing, are you originally from Frederick? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little town called Arlington, Virginia.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I grew up in Annandale, so
yep.
I know the area.
Yep, right down the road.
So you came to Frederick at some point, I'm assuming when?
That is an interesting story. I worked in Arlington for a while. My first federal job was with Department of Defense at Fort Myer. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then a little place, really, Fort Story, Virginia, okay. Which is very small. And my boss was a wonderful woman at the time who said, I'm not going anywhere. If you want a promotion, you need to go overseas.
Oh, wow. Mm.
So I did. I lived in Panama for 10 years and worked for the Department of the Army. And that command moved back to Miami, Florida, to be in the United States. And then I was hired for Department of Agriculture in Frederick, Maryland, at their training center on Thomas Johnson Drive.
Okay, so work brought you here.
Yes, and I was thrilled to. I loved being overseas. I loved the variety, but it was great to be back to family mm-hmm. and be close enough to Arlington. My mother said, why don't you move to Arlington? I said, I can't afford. This was 2001. Who can afford to live in Arlington? But Frederick was great.
Expensive. Yeah. Some people say Frederick's too expensive as well.
I got here just in 2001, just before, you know, a couple of years before houses got crazy. I was very lucky.
Had you visited Frederick before you moved here?
No.
Never?
No.
Growing up in Arlington, never yeah. doing that. Wow.
Yeah, Maryland was kind of unknown up there to the north. That's my ignorance, was just we didn't visit a lot of Maryland, so I'm thrilled to be been here for 16 years, don't see myself going anywhere.
So you like Frederick?
Oh, I love it.
Okay.
I love it.
So there wasn't any sort of time when you came here and thought, oh, no, what have I done? Frederick.
Isn't no. That no,
Kate
no,
had that
love
opinion
it.
When she got here. That's why I bring that.
Colin, one thing that I wish that you would fix about Colin is that he likes to tell flagrant lies about me. So maybe that's something you could coach out of him.
A vivid imagination.
Yeah, he does. He does have a vivid imagination. But one thing I'm curious about is when you were working for the Department of Defense and then the Department of Agriculture, were you doing life coaching then? Or how did you make that transition, if not?
That I was doing coaching for USDA here in Frederick. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. I was a leadership development specialist. So we did training for new supervisors, training for team building, communicating. So it led right into coaching. One of the other senior training specialists had been investigating this coaching thing. So this was 2001, 2002. She was investigating that. And then I went to a conference. All the other senior training specialists went to coach training. And I thought, whew, I don't want to be a coach. I knew nothing about it. Mm-hmm. But I thought all you did was listen to people complain.
That's all we do as journalists.
Oh, well, okay. Maybe that was the job. But I thought, people are just going to complain, and I'm going to have to listen to that all day. So I was glad I was representing the agency at a conference in New Mexico. But I get back, and the boss says, now you're going to coach training. I said, okay.
Oh, no.
So I went, It was fascinating. And then coached a team of mid-level leadership employees for USDA and individuals. So I was what they call an internal coach. I was a federal employee in the federal workplace coaching other, and private agencies have internal coaches. That just means they're both employed there and they coach employees. Now I'm an external coach, but that's how I came to it. Not enthusiastically, but embraced it once I figured out what it was not just, it was not listening to people complain.
What were some of the things that made you embrace it?
It was counterintuitive to me, both while working at the training center at USDA, which I'll just put in a plug for the locals, the best training agency I've ever worked for. They're phenomenal. While working there and then also doing advanced coach training, things that I thought, well, this is very simple. Nobody's going to be excited about this. Nobody's going to pay for this. Just giving you my undivided attention with no agenda, no dog in the fight. I'm just here to listen to you. And people were like, oh, thank you so much. And I thought, really? You're excited about that? But I saw it repeatedly and repeatedly that we're almost, most of us, I would say, are kind of starving for that rapt attention from someone. Because most of us listen with, well, when Colin's finished talking, I'm going to tell him that story about my dog. I'm not really listening to you.
I agree. That's so, I have such a problem with this in real life. I'm so glad you recognize this. I feel sometimes like I'm the only person who realizes this. People don't listen anymore. They just think about what their responses are going to be and how smart and clever they can be and all of that. They don't actually care. Kate, what do you think about that?
I totally agree too.
Do you really though? Have you ever thought this before?
No, I do. I think that, you know, that a lot of people do. They think one step ahead in the conversation and they're more concerned about their turn. So it's not, you know, it's not an experience a lot of people have.
What kind of coach are you? Are you a hard-nosed coach? Would you yell at somebody if you had to?
It's interesting you bring that up. This gives me a chance to put in a plug for a group of local coaches.
Okay. A lot of plugs.
Yes, lots good. Of plugs.
This is good.
That's a plug. I got 7 more in my pocket. But there's a group of local coaches that meet 4 times a year here in Frederick. And I'm going to go on a little trail here, so you're going to have to come back and go, Ann, the question that brought you here. But it was, am I a hard-nosed coach? We started meeting in 2012. And the local ICF chapter, you're going to hear me say ICF, International Coach Federation, chapter met, and they wanted to have kind of a networking get together with other coaches. It's free. It's for anyone interested in coaching, not just coaches. And they said, if you'd be willing to volunteer to facilitate that, let us know. So I wrote back. I said, I will do one in Frederick. And they wrote back and said, great, you can help with the one in Rockville. Now, this is 8 o'clock on a weekday, 8 a.m. Do you want to drive to Rockville at 8 o'clock on a weekday?
Virtually never.
Never. So I wrote back. I said, no, I will start one in Frederick. So we started with 5 folks, and now they have about 12 or 15. It's still going on. I did the first 3 years, and there's a wonderful woman named Elizabeth Vismans who runs it now. And again, for anybody even interested in coaching, they get together 4 times a year. But what reminded me of your question, Colin, was there's a gentleman there who introduced himself as the ruthless coach.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
The ruthless coach.
The ruthless coach. I also facilitated a webinar. I do monthly continuing education for coaches. And one of the topics I chose was, what's your coaching style? So this is a very long answer, but it goes to a lot of coaching. Coaching is based on 11 defined, clearly delineated competencies like active listening, ethical standards, creating trust and intimacy, planning and goal setting. And he said, I am the ruthless coach. Now, as long as, I would argue, as long as he's meeting those 11 competencies, good to go, thumbs up. I have no problem with that. He will attract a clientele, absolutely. very experienced, very good coach. I also meet those 11 competencies, and I am not ruthless. And I'll tell you why. Just my experience, just my opinion. If you are open to learn, you learn more. If I shut down when we're talking, I learn less. That determines my style. But coaches have different styles.
Is it exhausting to be constantly open to learning?
I think it's invigorating.
Do you? There are never any times where you're like, I don't want to learn anymore. I just want to go to bed.
Oh, the Far Side cartoon where the kid says, can it be excused? My brain is full. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. And it's funny, being a longtime trainer, I'm not a great student. And at about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I just want to put my head down on the desk. You're right.
Okay.
You're right.
Hopefully, but you don't want to put your head down on the desk after this
podcast. No.
That's what we're hoping. So inspired learning principles is something that at least Kate brought to my attention earlier, is on your website. Is it the website?
Yeah, we saw on your website that you had learned the most effective learning process in the world, and yes. I was very interested.
Yeah,
in that.
What constitutes the most effective learning process, and how did you, teach us? We want to be taught now.
Have you got like 6 hours?
We've got 6 hours.
Very good. Get the editor ready. So this goes, now when I went to coach training, and then you said something about how did I shift from, oh my goodness, I'm going to listen to people complain, to embracing coaching.
Those are so, the way you frame that is so interesting. The difference between I don't want to listen to people complain to now I embrace coaching, which could also be said I'm embracing listening to people complain.
Could be, yeah.
Could be.
And there's a place and time for that. Doesn't go on forever.
We like to complain, but go ahead.
Oh, I started, my brain just going on a little vacation here. Do you have theme music? When I was still a federal employee, they said, hey, we love that you're so enthused by coaching. Wait till the new fiscal year. We'll pay for you to go to full-fledged coach training. I said, I can't wait. I want to go now. Give me a week of leave, I'll pay for it. That's how excited I was by coaching. Crazy woman. So I went for a week to a coach training program. Now, at that point, 2001, I was in my late 40s. I'd been to a lot of training, a lot of training. If you're in a work, in any business, you go to a lot of training. Some of it's good, some of it's okay. I walked in the door of this place, and it was life-changing, which is not too broad of a statement. It was taught using this inspired learning model. It was an affirming, critique-free learning environment.
So everything's positive?
The focus is on the positive. So let me give you an example. So Johnny is in class, and the lesson is mathematics. And he says, 2 + 2 = 5. Most of us don't think 2 + 2 = 5. The student next to Johnny, and he's counting on his fingers, but somehow he gets 5. The student next to him raises the hand and says, I think it's 4. So as the facilitator of learning, not the deliverer of content, but the facilitator of learning, I say, yes, 4. And Johnny, you were using your fingers. You were really paying attention there. I could see you were engaged in that answer. And he, I guarantee you, is going to get that 2 + 2 = 4. What he's not going to do is shut down, put his head down, and think I'm stupid. That's huge. And that's what that environment was like. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just blew Colin's mind. And do you
I'm done.
You're done? And I mean, do you think that is it taught because there's just such a negative attitude in some workplaces? I mean, most are critique forward. Is that the idea behind it?
It came out of one of the facilitators of my coach training was Peter J. Redding. I mentioned the competencies earlier today, the coach competencies. He's been around coaching long enough, he helped write them. So this was
write them. Okay,
write them. Yeah. W-R-I-T. He helped write those competencies in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. He and Marcia Collins, his coach training co-facilitator, developed this environment. And I've interviewed Peter a couple of times, kind of like this, mm-hmm. in webinar formats, and said, tell us about the early days, because we think this just landed in your lap one day, which obviously it didn't. Mm-hmm. And it was trial and error, learning, and how do I keep the learner engaged? Now, the learner can be Johnny in the second grade. It can be a colleague of mine at work, can be a spouse, can be a neighbor, can be a boss, can be anyone. How do I keep that avenue open? Most important thing, if I figure that proving you wrong or pointing where you didn't do correct is the most important thing, sure, maybe you do that, but have I shut down?
Exactly. So that leads me to a question, and I think I've actually had conversations with you about this, Kate, before. I feel like everything, I was going to say society, but society is kind of a dumb word, but everybody is so overly critical. We live in a period of time where I think criticism is valued more, and it's more blatant, and it's more obvious, and it's more in everybody's face than, I mean, I can recall, and I've been alive 200-300 years, so I know everything.
You don't look a day over 180.
I know. But do you find that we live in sort of times where things are perhaps overly critical, and it's, you know, immensely damaging to the way that people evolve and the way that people are, for instance, able to take coaching?
You know, I don't focus on that too much.
Because you don't think critical. you're positive, though. You're positive about this.
Well, I'm selfish, number one. First and foremost, I'm selfish, and I don't want to feel bad. So if something is negative, I try to give it minimal attention. Doesn't mean mm-hmm. it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But I remember very clearly a colleague of mine at USDA one day said to me, I don't watch the news anymore. Now, this is not current. This is going back mm-hmm. over 10 years. And I thought, that's an option? Because when I grew up, my parents read 3 newspapers a day. I don't know how they found the time, mm-hmm. but they read 3 newspapers a day front to back. They watched Huntley Brinkley, who you people don't know.
You people don't know
Huntley Brinkley. But they watched the news every night. They read 3 newspapers. It was just, you did that. You watched the news. It wasn't whether you wanted to. You sit down there and you watch the news. And when I heard her say that, I don't watch the news anymore. It doesn't make me feel good. I went, oh my God, is that an option? So it took a little while. The television called to me. That's in the TV days when people got their news there. But yeah, I try, and I'm pretty successful.
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was just gonna ask. So, as a life coach, is that something that you recommend, disengaging from anything that might make someone feel bad or feel negatively? Because, I mean, like, as journalists, it's hard for us, for example, to just disconnect from the news. Like, we can't really do that.
Yeah, a lot of it's fake news, but... Yeah. No, that's a good question, though.
Yeah. And thank you, because you brought up a really good point. One of the benefits of coaching, because I saw both your eyes kind of light up with this rapt attention and trust, this environment, is I remind myself, more so when I was starting out in 2005, but I remind myself I have no idea what's good for you, Colin, or what's good for you, okay? I literally don't. And when I start from that point of, I don't know what's good for you, I can be of service. Because otherwise, remember, I've got that agenda. Well, as soon as Kate finishes talking, I'm going to tell her about XYZ, and then that will change her life, and it'll be good. I have to come at it with a point, I choose to, with a point of great curiosity and partnership. Does that make sense?
It makes sense to me. Does it make sense? You have a quizzical look on your face.
No, so it's, I mean, it's just giving your clients the option to choose what to disengage from, I guess, and what you listen to what makes them feel validated and good versus what, okay.
Yes.
Do you think optimism and positivity is a choice that people can make on a day-by-day, moment-by-moment basis?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a tap dance answer to that, because I did grow up, I was actually born in D.C. Mm-hmm. I was born at Georgetown University, and I'm going back there when I die. I'm going to Georgetown Medical School, but I'll be dead. So I was born in D.C., so I can tap dance answers. I choose a positive focus. There are individuals, if my smarter sister were here who studied this, would say, chemistry is against them. Chemistry requires a little help there. And I would let a client know right away, unqualified, can't speak to that. But assuming we're balanced chemically and not suffering with an illness, then if a positive focus is available, if that what I call a shift in perception, and the client is inclined to go in that direction, I will facilitate that. But they're also teaching me when they stay in what I call a cul-de-sac. We're talking about complaining a little bit. And the coach competencies, one of the skills is allowing a client to vent and clear. I'm so glad it's written in there, because otherwise, as coaches, we start a session and they're going, oh my gosh, and today and this and that and blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, well, they're paying me. Should I move on? Should I push through this? You get to know how much clearing and venting is appropriate. And when we're in it for a while, I call it a little cul-de-sac. And I go, my job is just pointed out. Colin, we're in a little bit of a cul-de-sac here. We're just kind of driving around. Is this of service to you? And you may say, yeah, I need to vent a little bit more. Bear with me. Or you may go, yeah, you know, I'm getting tired of the view here. Let's go to a new cul-de-sac.
I'm going to remember that, the whole cul-de-sac thing. I'm going to do that. Well, let's implement that in the newsroom.
Okay, you can send out an email.
Good to know you have my back. Good to know you have my back. You just touched on a few things, though. And one question that we had talked about earlier that we wanted to ask, and this is a heads up, too. We're going to finish eventually this podcast. We solicited questions within the newsroom. What would people like to ask a life coach? So we're trying this experiment with you. That will happen later. But one of the things that had been talked about, not just between Kate and I, but I do think we received a question along these lines as well, is people, I think it seems that people may have the thought that there isn't much difference, or they think that there is a lot of similarities between being a life coach and a therapist. And we talked about this before we went on air too. Do you get that a lot? And do you get people who come to you thinking that, you know, they treat you as though you are their therapist, and you have to stop them and say, oh, wait, I'm not a therapist. And also the other part of that question, of course, is what is the difference between the two?
Thank you for asking that, because it's an important difference. Here's a weird analogy. If you wanted jewelry repair, but you wound up in a cobbler shop, it's another word you young people don't know. No.
You people. You people.
But, you know, you'd be confused. You go, well, you both do repair, and can't you fix my shoes? You fixed her bracelet. And you go, no, not really. That's not what I do. That's a weird analogy.
That was.
Right? That was a weird analogy.
Us young people.
You young people. But it's tremendously important that people understand that for any number of reasons. So that you don't get your jewelry fixed by a shoe repair place, number one.
So I have to change that now.
Yeah.
That's why my jewelry has been broken all this time.
That's right.
Okay.
That's it. That's it. So you go to somebody who is hopefully an expert in the field. I mentioned I have a sister who's a psychologist. She went to school for a long time. She understands much, 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 much more than I do. I have no business in her field. There are a number of psychologists, social work therapists who become coaches, and they get certified, and they go to training. They go to accredited training because they recognize the difference between therapy and coaching. One of the main differences that's easily observed is we don't go backwards much. We don't talk about maybe unresolved conflict or hurt or childhood environments because we're about goals in the future. What will serve you in the future? How do you want to move forward? Is it communication? Is it interactions? Is it self-esteem? What do you want to move forward with that does not require a look back? The other thing is that the ICF, International Coach Federation, has a strict set of ethical standards and requires ethical training specifically for coaches who are certified that says you will make clear to potential clients if you are a mentor. Mentors know. So a mentor here at the newspaper would be someone who's been around maybe a couple decades, knows the system. You don't want a mentor to sit with you all day and go, "Well, I don't know, Colin, what do you think?" You go, "Come on, give me the secrets. You're my mentor. Tell me." Also, imagine a consultant, because sometimes they are confused with coaching. Do you want to hire a consultant and have them come in and go, "Well, I'd like to hear what each of you..." You go, "Wait a minute, bud, we're paying you. Tell me what needs to be done." And therapy would be diagnose this. Mm-hmm. Tell me proven methods to assist with this. And coaching is, let's identify where you want to go, what you want to do, why, what you most value, and then I will be your partner on that trip. I will always be a step behind you, never a step ahead, because I'm not charting that course. You are. And you're also free to change course, because people will start out saying, "I want this. I want to learn how to perform better in my job." Sometimes by the end of it, they realize I'm doing fine, or I want a different job. I'm a step behind.
Mm-hmm. So in coaching, there are no set answers. In psychology, there are set answers. There are proven answers.
I assume so, that a psychologist would be able to sit, or a psychiatrist would be able to sit with an individual and provide a science-based mm-hmm. diagnosis.
But you're along for the ride.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you ask people to come in with clear-cut goals, like, "I want to reach this level in my career," or "I want to make a complete change," or "I want to fix relationships, you know, with my family"? Or can someone just come in with something very broad, like, "I have low self-esteem and I need help with that"?
Yeah, and if they honestly, thank you for asking that, Kate, if they said, "I have low self-esteem," my first thing would be, "Are you better with me or are you better with a therapist?" So we would identify that. Sometimes it's a matter of confidence. I need to apply for the next level of job and I don't present myself very well. I want to get better at that. But some people come with broad goals, some come with specific goals. A lot of times I coach exclusively federal executives, and many of them, I'd say at least 3/4 of them, are in a new job. So they're long-term 20, 25-year employees, but now they're in a position they did not occupy before, which can come with its own set of interesting workplace things going on. Sometimes you're now supervising somebody who used to be your colleague. So how does that work? So in that case, it may be more broad. I just want to navigate my beginnings in this new position as best as possible.
One word that I think is synonymous with coaching is inspiration. I know, at least athletically speaking in sports, and Kate is actually our sports expert, so she can speak better to this. She's just shaking her head for those watching on the simulcast. But especially in sports, you know, coaching, a lot of it boils down to inspiring the players to perform at a certain level. Do you feel, is this the same kind of thing? Is part of your job to inspire the people who come to you?
If that happens, I'm thrilled.
But it's not a goal or a requirement of a life coach.
I, you know, off the top of my head, I'd have to say it would be a little bit sad if it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that would happen, but again, that's my hope.
That's
the most important thing. But it's interesting you mentioned inspiration, which is such an important word to me with the inspired learning model. But I heard a great quote recently, I forget what it was, but it said, motivation from the inside is inspiration. So if I can tap into what motivates you, and we do that, then progress, and we talked a little bit when Kate and I first spoke about New Year's resolutions, will be easier because it comes from you. There are things nobody has to tell you to do that you can't wait to do. I mean, think of one right now, something you really enjoy doing. Nobody has to convince you. You're kind of watching the clock. You want to go, now I'm going to this.
Eat. Yeah. Were you going to say something more motivational?
No, Kate took eat away from me, but then I went to drink, but that was... That probably wouldn't work well for a family-oriented podcast. I want to talk a little bit about something that Kate brought to my attention, too, that we hear you invented. It's called the synchronicity mirror.
Yes.
Is that a coaching technique? We were curious. Yeah.
It's not a technique. It's an assessment. And that was, you talk about positive. I believe that a focus on what I want brings more of what I want. What you focus on expands. There's a lot of practitioners of that. Abraham Hicks, Wayne Dyer, many, many people. It pretty basic. I have a question for you.
Okay. I don't know what the synchronicity mirror is.
I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
Okay.
How many green Volkswagens did you pass on the way to work today?
12. I don't, none. I don't know.
Yeah, do you know?
I would say probably zero.
But probably you don't know.
I mean, not 99% sure.
Yeah. You're going to see them on the way home.
Are there that many green? That's where my brain goes. I didn't actually think there were any. So, okay. We'll see some on the way home.
What you focus on expands. So the premise of this synchronicity mirror is, I thought, life really is kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. And we may not know in the moment how pieces fit together. I told you earlier that I got a fabulous job here in Frederick in 2001. What I didn't tell you was 10 months earlier, I'd applied for another one at the training center in Shepherdstown. And did not get it. And I was devastated. I was so sad. It would have been close enough to home, lovely. And I thought, why didn't this happen? It was perfect. I couldn't see how the puzzle pieces fit together at the time. This is a visual graphic view. You actually create right on pieces of, on paper, of a puzzle. How life has brought you this far, and then you color code them. Some are red, like, oh, I think in hindsight that was not great. Yellow is, I really don't know. I don't know what to make of that. And green was, this was great. I'm very happy with this. And then you go back and look at those and try to figure out what brought me this far. What did I start out thinking was an unfavorable that actually led to this. I'm so happy to be in Frederick. The job was better on multiple levels, but at the time I didn't get that. So assessments are great if they provide clarity to the person taking them. So my hope is that folks will come away and say, you know, in spite of how this piece of life and this piece of life, and you leave a couple of them blank at the end because you don't know what's coming next. So synchronicity being, what I thought was really a downer at the time actually turned out to be okay. And I think most of us can think of examples of things we look back on and go, it seemed dreadful at the time, but in hindsight, maybe not. Did that help a little?
Yeah. Did that help you, Kate?
I think so.
Okay. You mentioned a jigsaw puzzle in terms of life. Do you think that there is ever a time – when the jigsaw puzzle is completed, that people get to that point. Are you to that point, perhaps?
I sure hope not, for myself.
So you never want to complete the puzzle, because not completing a puzzle is very annoying. I have this big puzzle in my living room right now, and it's not completed. So
I don't know if this will make any sense, but one of my all-time favorite quotes is, "You can't do it wrong, and you'll never get it done." That would drive you crazy, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
He's not very patient.
Oh, thank you, Kate. She does know me well, but yes, I'm not very patient. And you're right, that did drive me crazy.
Well, my work here is done.
That's it. And I think that kind of segs into another question that we were wondering, because we were wondering, is the idea behind life coaching, I mean, do you want to get people to a point where they no longer need a life coach?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And
then you'd be out of work.
There's always the next client.
Okay. Well, you were going to say, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, there's always the next. But yes, life coaching is goal-oriented. And some folks will get there in 2 to 3 months. Some will get there in a year. Some will do a year, take a year off, and come back. Now, when we say a year, people go, wow, that's a long time. I may only speak to them every 3 or 4 weeks with work in between. Everything happens in between the coaching sessions. So you want to be more mindful of communication. One thing a lot of my clients get are drive-by taskings. They come in with a plan for the day, and boom, that's hijacked by a drive-by tasking. So we talk about strategies for how they will deal with that. How did this wind up on my desk? Literally, looking at that. And then we'll check in again. Accountability is a very nice feature of coaching. If you know somebody's going to ask, even though I'm not ruthless. One of my favorite questions is, we said you would, when you had a drive-by tasking, one of my clients would kept a water bottle on her desk. She would pick it up and take a long, slow drink, rather than just respond out of habit to that. So we would check in, and if you said, I did it about a quarter of the time or half the time, thumbs up. Yay, great. Is it helpful? You want to keep doing that? We'll do that. If you checked it off your list, great. If you didn't do it at all, I'll ask, what did you learn by not doing it? Because you learned something. And that may really be the gold. That may really be deep.
Do you have multiple people who you coach at once, like couples coaching, for instance? Like a couples therapy type of situation? Do you coach people whose relationship is maybe damaged and they want it to be better?
No.
Okay. Is that something anybody does? Is that a life coach thing?
That, in my experience, would be someone who first had the therapy background and then got certified in coaching, and they would be qualified to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. And what about my, because that's sort of similar, I was wondering, are there any situations that you don't feel like you can handle? Like, what if someone had alcoholism, for example? Is that something that a life coach could help with?
No. If it were just, if someone said, by the way, I'm an alcoholic, but I've been in recovery for 20 years, and I'd say, well, thank you for mentioning it. Is it in any way impacting the goal you want to work towards? And if they said yes, there'd be other resources for them. If they said no, just something I mentioned. If it does not impact the work we're going to do, then I would be comfortable moving forward. And by the way, I have literally a 17-page agreement they have to go through and sign. They got to want to work with me.
Wow.
And
it's good you're not ruthless.
Yeah, well, that's where it comes out. But it outlines in there, I don't do therapy, I don't do this. If you have a medical condition, disclose to me what will be helpful for me to know in total confidence. That's the other part of coaching, to the extent allowable. I'll tell you a funny story. I used to say to the people, everything you share with me will be confidential to the extent allowable by the law. And please don't tell me you're going to climb over the fence at the White House, because then I got to go look up the numbers. I don't know who to call. I've used this for years. And then everybody started climbing over the fence at the White House. Not my clients, though.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It was you they should have arrested. You sent all those people over the fence.
Yes, those are all my clients.
I have one more question, and then I want to get to these. But before that, Kate, do you have any? Do you have anything else that we didn't get to so far? That I have one very important.
Oh, you have, okay. You have a really important question. I guess the only question, lingering question in my mind is, what do you do? You know, you mentioned before that a lot of coaching has to do with accountability. You know, someone is coming and so you're asking people about their progress. But what do you do when people make excuses? How do you handle that?
That's a great question. It would depend, is this a once or twice thing, or every time we talk, is someone saying to me, yeah, I didn't get around to that, yeah, I didn't do what I said I was going to do. If it's a long term, and by long term it would mean three sessions in a row, mm-hmm. to me, then I actually talk about the ethics of coaching. I have an ethical obligation to either refer them to someone else. I always have an ethical obligation to check in with them and saying, are we moving toward your goals? Because if we're not, then I need to honor this coaching relationship ending at any time you want it to end, any time. Because why would we continue if we're not moving towards your goal? So I am aware of that. And again, hey, I'm not here to listen to people complain. But if it's a one-time, you know, if it's once or twice and they go, oh, my gosh, and, you know, we've moved in because we're remodeling our house and we're living somewhere else and life is crazy, I get that. But if it's continual, then we need to talk and they need to do what's best for them. No hard feelings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does a life coach have a life coach?
Yes.
So you have a life coach?
I have had one throughout the 13 years I've been coaching. I don't always have one, although the ICF has a great program called reciprocal coaching, where you work in trios, so one coaches the other and the other coaches the other, and I just finished that up. That is specifically for people applying for their master certified coaching, which I hope to obtain someday.
Okay. So it is like every therapist has a therapist, every life coach has a life coach.
Yeah, at periods in our life, okay. Yes.
All right, and wow, 13 years you said too.
Yeah.
Wow. Are life coaches better at life than other people, than normal people?
Ooh, good question. I'm really bad at life myself, but I just talk into a microphone every now and then.
I'm going to just garble that answer.
We should both ask these, right?
What?
All of the questions, right?
Oh, this will be fun. So these came from the staff.
These came from the staff.
All right. I love it. I love the one on the paper plate. That's my favorite.
We solicited questions. And clearly, our newsroom is in need of some coaching. So we wanted to ask you these anonymous questions before we go. And please know that everybody will be listening when this comes out, and if you don't save their lives, they're going to be very angry with
okay,
you.
Okay, I got it, yeah.
Do you want to go first, Kate?
Okay, sure. Well, this first one that we have is, what would you say to someone who isn't happy with their career path but is good at it and has been doing it for over 10 years? They can't seem to find out what their true passion is.
I love that. I alluded to this but didn't get into it. I mentioned coaches have different styles. One thing I do at the first coaching session with a new client is we do a long 2-hour exercise to determine their individual personal values. So at your gut core level, what is most important to you? So this individual said, I'm good at my job. I've been here long enough. I know what's going on, and I'm not happy. I would look at the values. When I get on the phone, because I coach by Skype or phone, I have the client's file in front of me and I have their values on a page. And I look at that for a couple minutes before every call, whether we're together for a year or anything. And about half the time, I'll just take a minute at the beginning of the call and read those values to them to reinforce that. It may be that a personal value, suppose it's freedom, is a personal value for this, I'm just guessing here, is a personal value for this person, and there's very little honoring of freedom in that job. That would just be a little rub between a personal value and the career. And this could be in a relationship or in the home that you live in. But knowing the personal values, I call an 80-foot flagpole that when everything else is a little crazy, we head towards your personal values. And knowing them, and in all the time I've been coaching, I've only had one client who knew their personal values when we started. Everyone else went, well, I don't know, you know, kind of like this. But when they saw them in writing as an outcome of that foundation session, some of them were flabbergasted, some were impressed, some were just happy and kind of went, yeah. But we don't walk around in writing prioritized with our personal values. And it's golden information.
Personal values. Do you know your personal values, Kate?
Yeah,
oh.
But they're secret.
Oh, okay. there that was. we had actually talked about this earlier, which is something we didn't get to in the main interview, so we can maybe touch on this now. Do you approach coaching differently with people based on their personality type, or are your methods and techniques fairly standard for whomever you come across?
I would say they're tailored to the client.
Okay.
I've coached, and it's very interesting. I coach some number of engineers, male and female. And you might think, oh, well, an engineer may cut and dried ISTJ on the Myers-Briggs, you know. Okay. Not true. There are some folks I just know want it short and snappy, to the point. Let's move on, goal-oriented. And, of course, I'm honoring that. Whatever it is that you want to accomplish here and your style, you are one step ahead of me on that path. But if they are more, there was another engineer who was just intrigued with this idea of personal values and how it could be used at home and there, then I go in that path. So I don't know by sex, by occupation, by background, how someone will show up, because we can choose to be pretty authentic with our coaches. We may show up there differently than we do in other places. So I will always follow the client. I would not be able to have a pat way mm-hmm. to do things and honor that individual.
Okay.
Did that?
Yeah. That's good. We talked about the Myers-Briggs thing
mm-hmm.
earlier.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Neither of us know our Myers-Briggs.
Yeah.
We don't know.
But we were thinking, well, she knew. She took the test at one point.
Yeah, but that was when I was really young.
Yeah, I have no idea. Could you guess what we are?
No.
No.
No. And I like the Myers-Briggs. I used to, I'm qualified to interpret it and administer it. And when I taught it to Park Service employees, when I was still a federal employee, I would say this in the classroom. I'm not going to tell you anything you don't already know, which is very honoring of a group of adults. Because mm-hmm. they don't want, come on, I'm an adult. Don't treat me like a dope here. I said, I'm not going to tell you anything you don't know. But what you are going to do is say, that's why Joe is the way he is.
Ah. Mm.
That's why my spouse is the way they are. It just provides another way of looking at that individual, and most importantly to me, honoring their preferences. It's about preferences. Preferences.
Okay. You're up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This next question is sort of similar, but it says, I'm in a rut and need to make some changes. How do I let go of the fear that comes with making career changes or other major life changes?
There is a graphic we used. I talked about one of the webinars. So if you can picture this, if you're following along at home, draw a little circle. And the innermost circle is where we're safe. You know how to brush your teeth. You know how to make a pot of coffee.
It's debatable.
You know, there are things we know. We know how to use the VCR remote.
No.
Oh, she doesn't. Oh. She actually doesn't.
All right.
She doesn't. She doesn't know what a VCR is.
I know. Oh, it.
That's right. A VCR.
You people, you young people. She's.
VCRs are what we used to use to cook food. but there's then the circle outside that total comfort is a little bit of discomfort. So it's when they say we're updating your operating system, you go. You know, or you got a new phone and it's an Android instead of an iPhone or vice versa, or something has changed. How do you like when they change the timekeeping system on your computers? You know, you will now enter your time and attendance using this new system or your travel orders. Everybody's like, why? Why does it? But you eventually learn it. And then the outermost circle is where we're really kind of walking on the tightrope. It's a little bit high risk. And great, you don't want to stay there, certainly. And you need to go back. I need to go back to the innermost circle where I'm just, you know, sitting at home doing the TiVo, petting the dog. But do we want to stay there the whole time? So they said, I'm in a rut. How do I overcome the fear? I would, go back, allow myself to go back and forth among those circles. Don't spend a lot of time at the top. Don't spend all my time in the inner circle. And embrace that middle circle that's a little bit, you know, coming here today, I had a little bit of adrenaline. And I've chosen to look at it like, this is good. This is good. The adrenaline will aid in that rather than, what's going to happen? And then do go back and pet the dog and
go to the VCR to cook
your dinner. Go to the VCR to cook your dinner.
Make gradual changes.
Yes.
Yeah. Start out. Yeah.
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 Okay, here's one. I have always found anger and to a lesser degree hatred to be incredibly useful as motivators that when harnessed properly have helped me reach any number of goals in my life. Why are so many people so quick to dismiss such a powerful tool as just a negative emotion or a negative state of mind?
Okay, well, now I'm going to go way off the track, okay? There is something called the scale of emotions. I'm not talking about coaching now. This came from Abraham-Hicks.com. Abraham-Hicks, H-I-C-K-S.com. They have a scale of emotions, and at the bottom is despondency and grief and self-loathing. And you go up, there's 22 of them, you go up about 8 or 9, and there's anger. You go, wait a minute, anger is not at the bottom? No, because you got anger, you got a lot of energy. You're moving. So anger, yeah, can be harnessed. It's not at the bottom. There's a time and a place for anger. And remember those three circles, do I want to be in the anger all the time or just use it as an energizer some of the time? I would never dismiss anything on that scale, but I personally sure am more relaxed when I only occasionally dip into anger, and then I can go to something even like boredom is okay. A little pessimism, then maybe a little optimism. So it's a matter of how's my energy flowing, but I think
anger's okay.
Yeah, anger in the right time and place.
It's good to know.
Yeah.
I needed that. I didn't write the question, but
defensively.
With anger, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Kate has the last one.
All right.
Okay. This one is, how do you handle career challenges with coworkers, toxic employees or employers? How do you spread positivity? So a multifaceted question.
You're a very positive person, too. So.
Yeah. That was like three. Read that one more time, please.
We can take it one at a time. So the first one is, how do you handle career challenges with coworkers? And then it's, how do you handle toxic employees or employers? And then how do you spread positivity?
They're all kind of related, aren't they?
Yeah, I'd
say. Yeah. Boy, it's tough to put... We don't have barriers we can put around ourselves. If we're near, I talked about energy, negative energy, or somebody who's very negative, it can grate and wear on us. But I would listen to that, clearing and venting, if this were a client who came to me and said this. And then I would go, what outcome do you want? Maybe they would say to me, I just want to be able to look at that guy and not get a knot in my stomach. For them today, that would be a victory. So we would talk about that. How can I pass them in the hallway or see them without the knot? Because we're starting small. We're not going to say, I want to be able to run up and hug him and he's my new best friend. I'd settle for not having a knot in my stomach. And then we would say, that's the outcome. What would that mean to you if you had that? And they would talk through that, and they're envisioning what that will be like if I could do that. That would mean I could, you know, go for a walk around the building or get some fresh air and leave him behind, and that would be our goal. And then we'd also define how they know they're successful at that. So you're already there building this vision of what it will be like when they can just look at that individual and not have a knot in their stomach. So coaching would be a lot of small conversations like that. It wouldn't answer all of those, but we would address each one. Is that?
Yeah. How would you deal if a client came in and one of his or her main concerns was a toxic coworker or a toxic boss that they had to interact with all the time? And so can you coach someone on how to handle toxicity in the workplace and things that they can do to adjust other people's behavior?
I have not found anything that will adjust anyone else's behavior, ever.
Good to know.
That's real. That's just me. But I do believe I have total control over my own behavior. That's a mind shift that I have not met a lot of people embrace. It's more, I will bend him to my will. I will make him. And I don't know the success rates at that.
Yeah. Do you think that that's sort of at the center of a lot of issues that people don't accept the fact that they control their own emotions?
I ask on that 17-page killer coaching agreement, mm-hmm. one of the questions I ask is how you rate yourself on how self-responsible you are.
Zero.
Okay. So it's an indication to me as a coach, because if someone is not self-responsible, I don't know that I can do much, honestly, mm-hmm. with them. Because if everything is outside your control, how are you going to make progress?
I don't know. I'm miserable for anybody but me. It's not my... No, but yeah, I totally understand that. I think that... Are those all you have, Kate?
Yeah, those are all the questions.
Those are all I have, too. If you had what? What are you laughing for? That's it? Okay. So we're going into 2018. I almost said 2017. What we will end on this, usually it's a lot of fun questions. These were very fun questions, as you heard. We're all in control of ourselves. If we want to change, we can change. It's not anybody else's fault. I need to work in 2018 on that. How about you, Kate?
Yeah.
Self-accountability.
Self-accountability
is a big deal. What advice would you give anybody in 2018? Not anybody. You've gotten to know us for almost an hour now. I'm sure this has been...
The highlight of my life.
Yeah. I was going to go 2017, but... So what advice would you give us going into 2018 to have the best 2018 that we could possibly have?
Well, I don't give advice except to my husband. And then it's ceaseless and endless.
Ruthless.
Ruthless. It's ruthless. Yeah. Hi, Bill. This is actually something I thought of. I was sitting next to a woman. I used to work with the USDA. And we hadn't seen each other in a few years. And she said, so tell me, what is this coaching? So in the moment, I just tried to get a little teeny chunk of what coaching was. So I'll share that with you. I would encourage anyone to sit down, and if you have the beginnings of a goal or something, a direction you'd like to move in, sit down and write why. Why you want that. And then write it again. I want to, joining a fitness club or losing weight is big for New Year's resolutions. Why? I want to feel better in my clothes. why. I would like to be able to chase the kids around more. Why? Well, I'd feel like I was more involved in the family. Why? And you can see how the layers of why and why and why are funneling down into why is that important to you. So do that as many times as you can, at least until it's irritating.
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
At what point? What end is that?
Do it at least five times. Okay. Do five whys.
Five whys.
And then the next W is write it down. Write it down just for you. Nobody else has to see it. But write down your whys. And then the last W is share it with someone. If okay. The person I asked you at the beginning, who can you think of that you can listen to, who listens to you, who you feel heard? I think I asked that. I hope I asked that. But that would be the question. Someone in your life who will listen to you, share that with them. So the why, the right, and the with, that will exponentially aid in making those resolutions happen, I think.
That's great advice.
I'm in.
I think that's great advice.
Can we have you back on at the end of next year? And we'll talk about what we said, our whys, and we'll see if we're any happier.
Yeah.
As individual. Yeah. Maybe more positive. We'll even tell each other. We don't, right? That's what we'll do, even if, just for the sake of the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a date.
It's a date. Ann Kelly, thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy. We hope you have a good 2018. You imparted tons of wisdom, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot. Did you learn a lot,
Kate? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the fourth W, wisdom.
Wisdom. Yeah. The fourth W is wisdom. I want to be positive now. Hopefully the rest. Kate just invented a new.
Yeah.
I'm going to go through the rest of the day the most positive I've ever been, which is a 3 on a scale. 1 to 10. But thank you so much for coming. Honestly, thank you.
My great pleasure. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Kate. It's been a delight.
For us as well. Thanks.